and he's worried about Colorado's public pension fund, PARA, which covers governor, attorney general, secretary of state. For news, I'm Ryan Warner. Next week, Colorado will swear in its statewide office holders for the next 4 years: governor, attorney general, secretary of state, and treasurer. In coming weeks, we'll sit down with them and hear what they want to accomplish. And let's start with a man who has a multi-billion-dollar responsibility to the public, State Treasurer Walker Stapleton. The Republican was re-elected in November, and he's worried about Colorado's public pension fund, PARA, which covers more than 500,000 people. Stapleton fears that without some big changes, the fund could become a liability for every Coloradan. We'll get to that in a moment. First, something more basic. What exactly does Colorado's treasurer do?
In Colorado, the treasurer is chiefly charged with investing all taxpayer money. That's one of the most sacrosanct aspects of the job, making sure that we get positive returns for taxpayer money. I'm proud to say that in every quarter that I've been the treasurer of Colorado, we've gotten positive returns. In addition to that, we manage an unclaimed property division, which has close to $700 million of unclaimed property, everything from safety deposit boxes, unclaimed gift cards, unclaimed life insurance benefits. In addition to that, we serve on a number of very important boards. We serve on the Investment Advisory Board of the University of Colorado, Colorado Corrections Industries, and the board of our public pension system, PARA.
You talk about positive returns as long as you've been treasurer. When was the last time a treasurer had negative returns in Colorado?
Well, it's been a while, and the good news about Colorado's investment statutes is that we have very strict guidelines when it comes to investing taxpayer money in Colorado. We are only allowed to invest in AAA-rated bonds, fixed income securities. So as far as I can remember, we've had positive gains, even at a time when we've had big hiccups in the market.
In your first term, you were mostly in the news for your conflicts with PARA, and that's the pension fund that covers around 500,000 current and former state workers.
Absolutely.
Teachers, other public employees. And we'll talk shortly about issues that you've butted heads with PARA's managers over. But first, we hear all sorts of dire things about other states and cities with insolvent pensions. In your eyes, how does PARA here in Colorado compare?
Well, I think if you look at nonpartisan research regarding the funding of state public pension plans, Colorado has consistently ranked in the bottom 20%. The funded ratio of our public pension plan is approximately 60% funded. And so to put that into layman's terms, that means that we have 60 cents on the dollar to pay out all the benefit to workers who need to be paid them by the state of Colorado. That is a problem. And my focus on this issue as treasurer of Colorado has been with the hope that we are able to proactively work to fix the funding problem that we have with our pension system before it bankrupts a city or a school district like it has in so many other states, and Colorado is not immune from that problem.
In your first term, you led an effort to get PARA to lower its estimated rate of return.
Absolutely.
A more conservative outlook from 8 to 7.5%.
Right.
This is essentially what the pension fund earns on its investments.
Right.
What you foresee that to be. Remind our listeners why you pushed for the more conservative estimates.
The game that goes on, the shell game with respect to public pension systems, is that you set investment assumptions as high as possible and hope for lollipops and rainbows, and then you pervasively underfund the plan. So the larger your return assumption is, the less you actually have to properly fund the plan. And my perspective is, let's get to a realistic, conservative investment assumption, and then let's properly fund the plan so we're not creating, in accounting terms, what is called a deferred liability, which is really just a debt burden that builds up the school district level or the city level until somebody has to cry uncle.
Would you like to see the estimated rate of return even lower than 7.5%? Is that something?
Absolutely. I think it needs to go lower. And
do you have a number in mind?
I think 6%, 5.75%.
The more conservative estimates, of course, increase the fund's shortfall.
Right.
Going from 8 to 7.5 did so to the tune of about $6 billion.
Yep.
And that puts more of a burden on employers and retirees to close the gap.
Absolutely. And it's not, and that's why it's not an easy process, because it requires shared sacrifice from members, from employers, the state of Colorado. It's a collective responsibility. And the sooner we share in that responsibility, the less bloodletting there will be at the end of the day.
And what is the next step to shrinking the unfunded liability?
Well, there's a couple policy initiatives that we're working on. Nothing is formalized yet. We're working on the possibility of a pension bond initiative that would reduce the unfunded liability immediately by by $5 or $6 billion, taking advantage of where rates are for bonds right now.
Is there one that hurts a little bit more?
Well, we're still at 58 as a retirement age for teachers in the pension system and 60 for everybody else. Many states have gone to 66 or beyond. We could still have a few years to go in terms of retirement age, but I would like to work on issues that improve the funding ratio of the pension system. And I think that the pension system is a great partner with me in doing that.
Do you foresee changing the age once again? It has already changed once under something called Senate Bill 1, but do you foresee that it would change again soon?
Well, it's worth pointing out that there was a very important Colorado Supreme Court case decided a few months ago, and it basically said, yes, you can, if a pension system is facing economic or financial problems and or even insolvency, you can adjust things like the cost of living adjustment. That was a very important Supreme Court decision because what it says is that if there is a shortfall, the idea that the benefits are sacrosanct from public employee standpoint is actually not the case. The courts have said, no, you can actually adjust benefits. And so I think that should be at the forefront of people's minds, especially members of the pension system, that, hey, let's design a system where Colorado can afford to pay me the benefits that I am due as a public worker. Let's not have these pie-in-the-sky promises when there's an insolvency, I get left out in the cold.
Would you like to change the retirement age, let's say in the next year?
I don't think that's practical or feasible. I would like to work on biting around the edges of the cookie and working to increase the funding levels, and then we'll see where we are, and we'll see if we need to take further steps.
You're listening to Colorado Matters. I'm Ryan Warner, and we're sitting down with the statewide office holders in Colorado, one of the ones you don't hear from as much. And today, that's the state treasurer, Walker Stapleton, who won a second term back in November. The economy here has improved tremendously in recent years, enough so that the state might soon be sending money back to residents,
right,
as required by the Taxpayer Bill of Rights. And there's growing debate about whether that's a good idea when there have been cuts to education, for instance. When the state faced a similar situation almost a decade ago now, a bipartisan group of state leaders convinced voters to let Colorado hold on to the tax refunds.
Right.
Where would you stand on doing something like that again?
Well, I think that the fundamental tenet of Tabor is one that needs to be protected at all costs, and that says that taxpayers should have a voice in voting on tax increases,
yeah,
and on keeping the money. And I think government—
Would you like to see the voters vote on that?
Absolutely. I think it's incumbent upon government, whether it be my office or the governor's office, to work collaboratively to do a better job of explaining to voters where their money goes. And so I think if something adds up to a poor investment, Colorado voters, by and large, are wise to that, and are not going to be supportive of it. On the other side of the coin, the more hopeful way to look at it is that if we in government do a good job and do our jobs in hopefully explaining to people where money is going to go and why resources are needed, that people will be reasonable enough to support fixes to our budget problems in Colorado.
You were a vocal critic of Amendment 66, which would have raised taxes to pay for education. I wonder, in the way that you got involved with that, would you throw your support behind something that you felt was responsible and that meant the state held on to the Tabor refund?
Absolutely. I would say that one of the issues with our budget is not just Tabor as the popular whipping post, but Gallagher and Amendment 23 have also created a Gordian knot of automatic ratchets in the budget. And we need to free ourselves of automatic ratchets and get more control over where we spend dollars and more results-oriented spending for our budget going forward in the future. But I'm not opposed reflexively to anything other than I'm opposed to anything that doesn't give the taxpayers a voice in where their money is being spent.
Constitutionally, of course, it would have to, given the Taxpayer Bill of Rights in this case. In your first term, you successfully convinced lawmakers to tighten up how state agencies issue bonds. You were concerned that there was too little oversight and input into what kind of debt was being issued.
Absolutely.
And a lot of independent actors,
yep,
in this. Going into your second term, what do you see as the biggest problem with how the state handles its finances?
Well, going forward, the next step is we're working on Colorado issuing its first ever comprehensive financial statement, just like a 10Q that you'd look at from Microsoft or IBM on a quarterly basis so that all Coloradans can actually see, okay, this state agency issued this debt with these terms. The more transparent we can be about debt issuance in Colorado, I think the more fiscally responsible we can be as a state as well.
You mentioned at the top of our conversation the oversight of unclaimed property in Colorado. That's part of the treasurer's job. These are bank accounts, other financial instruments. How good is the office at getting that back to the right people or to the descendants of the right people?
It's fantastic. You know, we processed more claims last year than ever in Colorado history. We processed 1.5 million claims. Great. Copayback.com.
We'll put a link to that.
Yeah.
At cprnews.org. What is the average, recuperation?
A couple hundred dollars. You know, we have 15% of our claims are over $10,000, but the average is a few hundred dollars.
I want to note that you are the cousin of both Bush presidents, and a former Florida Governor Jeb Bush held a fundraiser for you this past election.
Yep.
Do you have your eyes on any higher office?
Well, you know, I get asked that question all the time, and my simple response to it is that I never would have run for re-election in the first place if I didn't enjoy the job that I was doing, and that is being the state's fiscal watchdog and looking out for the taxpayer when it comes to economic policy issues.
Could be talking points for governor.
And, well, you know, who knows what the future holds.
Which is to say you're not sure about the higher office thing, or at least you're not going to tell us.
Well, you know, it's, who knows? We just got through a pretty divisive election in Colorado, so I'm trying to take a little bit of a breather before picking my head up and looking at what might lie ahead.
Thanks, Treasurer, for being with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Let's see if I have any unclaimed property now.
Good, good.
Republican Walker Stapleton starts his second term as Colorado's Treasurer next week. In our interview, he said that nonpartisan groups have ranked Colorado's PARA in the bottom fifth of state pension funds for fiscal solvency. We asked PARA to respond. Staff there say those rankings generally only look at the current level of funding and ignore changes that lawmakers have made recently to shore things up. As a result of those changes, PARA has already moved from 60% funded 5 years ago to 65% today. In the coming weeks, we'll talk with Colorado's new Secretary of State and Attorney General about their plans.